Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I hope you're having a great day. Today we're going to be talking about depression in Canada, and we're going to be talking with Michelle Savaire. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about vaccines and whether or not they're really beneficial to you. We're going to be talking with Etta West from Vaccine Choice Canada. But before we do that, here's Alan with the health news.
Drinking alcohol may be more dangerous for people infected with HIV, a new study suggests. The effects of alcohol appear to be more pronounced for those with the virus that causes AIDS, even when the virus is suppressed with modern antiretroviral treatment, the Yale University researchers reported. They noted that HIV patients who have just one or two drinks a day are at greater risk for death or alcohol-related health issues. The study involved patients treated by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs between 2008 and 2012. There were more than 18,000 HIV-positive patients and over 42,000 people not infected with the virus. The researchers investigated the link between drinking alcohol, death, and other health issues the patients developed. They found the patients with HIV who drank even moderate amounts of alcohol were more likely to develop alcohol-related health problems and die than those who were HIV negative. This was true even for those with suppressed HIV, according to the study published online February 2nd in the journal Drug and Alcohol Dependence. People with respiratory allergies, asthma, and the skin condition eczema may be less likely to develop glioma brain cancer, a new study suggests. The international team of researchers looked at more than 4,500 glioma patients and almost 4,200 people without brain cancer. The investigators found that a history of respiratory allergies, asthma, and eczema was associated with a reduced risk for glioma. People with respiratory allergies or eczema were 30% less likely to develop the deadly brain cancer than those without such conditions, the study found. Although the study found an association between allergic conditions and a lower risk of gliomas, it wasn't designed to prove a cause and effect relationship between those factors. The study was released online February 5th in the journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. Instant messaging can be a source of emotional support for teens and help them collaborate on school projects, but new research shows that texting after the lights go out takes a toll on students' sleep quality and academic performance. Study author Zhu Ming, a professor of neuroscience and neurology at Rutgers New Jersey Medical School, said in a university press release, "We need to be aware that teenagers are using electronic devices excessively and have a unique physiology. They tend to go to sleep late and get up late. When we go against that natural rhythm, students become less efficient." The researchers surveyed students at three New Jersey high schools, examining more than 1,500 survey responses. The study, published online recently in the Journal of Child Neurology, found the students who turned off their devices or messaged for less than 30 minutes after lights out had significantly better grades than those who messaged for more than 30 minutes in the dark. Depression increases the risk of heart disease and stroke in older adults, a new study indicates. The researchers looked at more than 7,300 seniors in France with no history of heart disease, stroke, or dementia at the start of the study period. Participants were assessed again 2, 4, and 7 years later. Initially, about 30% of the women and 15% of the men had high levels of depression symptoms. At each follow-up visit, about 40% of those with high levels of depression symptoms had recovered, while the same percentage had new depression symptoms, the study authors said. At all assessments during the study, less than 10% of participants were taking antidepressant medications, according to the report published online recently in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. Study participants who had high levels of depression symptoms at any visit had an increased risk of heart disease or stroke over 10 years.
Thanks for that, Alan. Well, our first guest knows about depression. Michelle Savaire has a bachelor's and master's degree in education and is an advocate for natural health and healing. She's an independent advisor in natural health product development. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. I appreciate you inviting me.
So tell us a little bit about, we heard on the health news there about depression in North America, and I'm wondering what the incidence of depression are in Canada.
Well, basically, what they consider critical or actually major depression is affecting about 5% of the Canadian population. Now, I think it's important to take a step back, though, and attempt to define what the word depression actually means. And with that said, the Public Health Agency of Canada, they highlight the word depression is a term that people will often use to describe the ups and downs in our lives. But it is important to stress that these are normal experiences and should not be confused with that of a depressive mood disorder, which is a serious medical illness and certainly deserves, professional attention.
What are some of the things that bring on you know, depression or depressive moods, really?
Well, there's a number of things that can essentially contribute to depression. I mean, certainly there's things like nutrition that's basically contributing to that. Certainly life circumstances will be there. You know, there's certain things that can definitely influence those types of things. So we need to be very aware, you know, of what's happening around us as well.
Michelle, are you on, are we on speakerphone? Because I'm just having a little bit of difficulty hearing you.
No, I'm not. I'm on a direct line.
Okay. So you're saying that the fact, you know, factors that are surrounding us are influencing, you know, how we're feeling. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. You know, as far as nutrition can, you know, dietary can, I mean, just life circumstances. I mean, stress in itself can definitely influence depression. Traditionally, we know about the whole fight or flight syndrome, which is really the body's response to and reaction to stress. So that's evolved from the time, you know, of our ancestors where we were in imminent danger. So those emergencies today aren't the same. So we do go through periods, most of us anyways, that suffer from chronic physical or even psychological stress. And that can be really perceived. You know, if I think my boss is mad at me at work and perhaps, you know, he or she isn't, I can still elicit that same stress response. So what happens in that instance is there's physiological changes, and they generally include things like blood pressure or heart rate and even glucose levels. So what can happen in that instance is it basically upsets the imbalances. Our sympathetic nervous system takes over, which is emotion. And those things will definitely impact even mental wellness in general. Now, the fact is that mood imbalances can be a biochemical issue, and we do realize that. And in these instances, you know, the prescription medications may be necessary in very serious cases. Oftentimes, we can look to natural health supplements. And they may be appropriate as an adjunct with professional guidance, or in mild to moderate cases, they may be really part of a standalone treatment, so to speak. So if it's biochemical, it makes sense to use any type of nutrients that might support the brain function. But if we continue along those stress lines, the one thing that we know, of course, is rest and nutrition is important. So we need to consider how our diets have changed over the last few decades. And some of the things that we know of is we know soil depletion and modern agricultural practices, so that's been a decline. There's also been a decline in fruit and vegetable intake. And what happens there is they're very rich in vitamins and folic acid. Along with that, there's a huge increase in sugar consumption. So we know that some, you know, people are eating upwards of 150 pounds of sugar per year. What we do know is that B vitamins are important for maintaining mood. So if our fruit and vegetables aren't being consumed in sufficient enough quantities, there is a potential for an insufficient intake of B vitamins. If we add the excessive sugar into that equation, B vitamins are needed actually to catabolize the sugar. So here's what's interesting, is that there's actually an association between depression and low levels of folate, which is your folic acid, B6, and B12, in studies of the general population.
Michelle, can people notice a difference, you know, in their moods just by taking B vitamins? Will that help people?
Somewhat, yes. I mean, it's definitely not the only thing that we need to, but, you know, your B vitamins, generally B complex, are definitely going to be supportive for energy and stress, but we do know, again, specifically that, you know, a B6, B12, and folic acid is going to be extra special. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why, I mean, I'm a big fan of various natural health remedies. I have my favorites, and there's some superb products on the market, but that's one of the reasons I'm a huge fan of the Viva products, because not only does Viva have, you know, the premium multi-ingredient formulations, but they also have the basic, Viva Basic line, and that's more of a single ingredient product line that contains what they call the Be Happy Complex, which, interesting enough, is folic acid, vitamin B6, and B12.
I want to come back to depression a little bit, and then we'll, you know, we'll talk about some of these. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about those. But is mental illness different than depression?
Mental illness as a whole is more of a category. So there's a number of conditions that are found under that whole term of mental illness. Depression is certainly one, but also classified under that umbrella term would be things like bipolar, schizophrenia, and even anxiety disorders. So you've got your post-traumatic stress disorder that we're hearing a lot more about in the news, and even what they consider general anxiety disorder. So essentially, any type of mental illness is characterized by alterations in thinking, you know, our mood, or even the behavior associated with any type of significant distress, which is impairing our function overall.
And Michelle, are we seeing an increase in the number of people that are exhibiting symptoms of depression? Is it, you know, over the last 50 years?
I don't know if it's an actual increase. I know that it definitely is more acceptable. There's always been a social stigma attached to mental illnesses and certainly depression. So a lot of people haven't wanted to admit it. It probably could have been behind closed doors. What we do know is that approximately 20% of Canadians will actually experience a mental illness at some time in their life. It does affect people of all ages, educational and income levels, and even cultures. But one thing that we do know and studies have consistently documented is that there are higher rates of depression and anxiety among women than among men. So it's actually a 2-to-1 ratio.
And does that have anything to do with, you know, people getting depleted, women getting depleted during pregnancy, you know, as they're raising their child in their womb?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, depleted during pregnancy. I mean, certainly that can play a part in it. There are some studies that show that it could be related to insufficient estrogen in women, no different than it could be insufficient testosterone in men. Sometimes light plays an important factor in that, so certainly we're aware of seasonal affective disorder, which again could be something on the, let's call it a lighter side of the winter blues, or towards, of course, actual depression. Exercise plays a response, and then we know, for instance, in women, they seem to suffer from excess stress, be it as it may, for whatever reason. Those are some of the influences, particularly for women.
And is there an age group that is more inclined to have it? You say women are more inclined, but what about certain ages?
No, it is across the ages, everywhere from our, you know, children are certainly facing it, especially in teens. Younger teens, there's a lot of pressure now for schools and social media, and definitely they are facing similar challenges as those of us that are a little bit older and even aged.
And, you know, just wondering on that point, Michelle, is it part of the issue that perhaps, you know, we're identifying depression or mental illnesses or, you know, mood disorders, because, you know, we're talking about it, whereas when we were children, perhaps, you know, maybe somebody had an issue, but it wasn't identified so easily?
I think you might be right. And again, as I said, that stigma has been attached to it, but it is becoming more of a condition that is more socially acceptable. CAMH, the Canadian Association for Mental Health, have definitely been very proactive in talking about it more. You know, it's a lot more on TV and things like that. So it's a very positive step forward. And I think, too, that people can recognize the symptoms more so than maybe what they had in the past.
We're talking with Michelle Severe, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about, you know, mental health and what you can do about it.